Cody Coates.
Joe Caiati, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm feeling good about this show. How are you?
I'm great. We have surprisingly a lot to talk about.
Yes, yeah.
It was pretty slow week, and then like all kinds of stuff dropped suddenly.
Yeah, I'm excited. It seems like our topic list comes together right in the last minute, but that's good. It keeps us on our toes.
Apple News comes out on Thursday, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. So before we get into topics, we do have some follow-up. First, listener Joe wrote in, at Joe Arrico is the Twitter handle, about, he wanted to talk about our Twitter discussion. So last week we were talking about, you know, Twitter's earnings and how they're kind of in a bit of a transition. So Joe wrote in and he said, quote, I wish Twitter would let you break your feed into tabs. So you name each tab and then you drag and drop people that you follow into the different tabs. So that was the first part of his feedback to us. And, you know, at first I thought, that sounds a little kludgy, but to be honest with you, that kind of sounds pretty cool. I feel like it's a design challenge for sure, but I feel like that could be executed well if it was thought through. What do you think?
You know, I was thinking, after I listened to last week's episode, I was thinking, well, you know, what could Twitter do? Like, what's one simple product that they could pull off? And I thought of this exact thing last week, and I even thought of a product name for it, Nests. You could have your little nest of people, Circles, you know, continuing the Twitter bird joke there. But
that's smart.
I think it would really differentiate Twitter because... on Facebook, you really don't have control of your newsfeed, mm-hmm. right? You just see essentially what Facebook wants you to see. You can kind of edit things around and say, oh, I don't want to see from this person or don't show me this. But it's just that one single feed that's pretty much up to Facebook's algorithm to decide what you see. And with this, they could have just a general news tab, close friends. You could make the circles and it be essentially mini timelines, just like Joe was saying. I think, you know, it would make Twitter not be just like Facebook.
Yeah, and you're so right about Facebook. Now more than ever, Facebook has so much control over what you see. I was just reading an article recently about one of the Facebook video engineers kind of wrote a blog post because there's been some controversy apparently about, you know, how they've been handling video in the feeds. And even he admitted it in the post that, you know, their algorithms are really catering your feed. And if say you skip watching videos, they're going to put less videos in your feed. Say you stop almost every time a video comes across your feed, they're going to put more videos in your feed. So they're doing all this stuff and they're doing it based on patterns, but these patterns may not really be what you want. I mean, they may be basing it off an off day. And with these Twitter tabs, or as you call nests, which I really think it's a smart name, you know, that could be a huge like overhaul of Twitter. And yes, it's a design challenge, but Joe goes on to say, you know, and then, you know, once they know what people you have in each tab, then Twitter could suggest and curate more people on your tab. And I think this is great for people who first sign up. Because imagine if you were someone who's brand new to Twitter and this was already implemented and you sign into the mobile app and you already have these pre-set up tabs, you know, with a couple people in each one. I mean, that's really easy to understand. You go, okay, I got categories and I got categories about different subjects, entertainment, technology, pop, and I have couple of these people already in there. And I feel like you get it right then and there. You get it. You know what needs to happen. Hat tip to both Joe and for you thinking about it during the week.
Twitter CEO, get at me.
Exactly. And then another thing that happened this week is people were reporting that they're seeing a new speaking of tabs, they're seeing a news tab on the mobile app. And it's only on a select amount of users. I checked both Twitter on my iPad and my iPhone. Like, I downloaded the official app. I don't have this news tab. Do you?
I do not have the Twitter app installed and didn't even know about this.
I know. I generally keep the Twitter app installed just to look at the App Store updates. But I just think that Twitter needs to stop experimenting and start implementing. I think that they're at a point where I understand they want to do this user testing, but they need to get the ball rolling. So I hope that we see something very, very soon. I think we should see something before they even find a new CEO. You know, there are still people on the product team that are developing these features. You know, a CEO is definitely vital to making decisions, but I think that they need to get, you know, solid features out there as soon as possible. So hopefully we will, you know, hear soon from Twitter. But I do have kind of a bone to pick with you about Facebook though, Cody. Because if anyone is a loyal listener of Diagnostics and Usage, you really pitched Facebook Paper to me, and I kind of fell head over heels for this app. And to be honest, it seems like Facebook has abandoned it, because in my opinion, it's slow. It's very, very, very slow to load things. And I think I'm at a point where I'm going to delete it and go back to the official Facebook app, because it appears that they are updating that almost weekly. And Paper seems like an experiment that failed for them.
Yeah, they haven't been pushing as many updates lately, and I don't have the regular app installed, so I don't have the like comparison. But I know what you mean when it's slow. I always like open it up, and then you have to wait a couple seconds before it does the slide animation and all of your like little news items come in. I really like the app. I hope they continue to work on it, because I think it's such a better implementation of Facebook than what I remember as the Facebook app.
Exactly. It's definitely the best implementation of Facebook that I've seen yet. But like, certain things that bother me is, okay, so I'll see that there's a badge on the Paper app. It says two, meaning two new notifications.
Oh, I don't allow badges.
So I'll open the badge, and on the little notifications, like world, whatever that icon is, the badge doesn't appear there. And then a couple seconds later, the badge appears. So then I click on the badge. Yep. But then when the menu opens, the notifications aren't there. So I got to wait even more time for the load. So it turns out that I'm waiting like probably collectively like 30 seconds to a minute for launching the app, waiting for the badge to show up, clicking on the notification banner, then finally seeing what that notification is. It's frustrating. It's frustrating to me.
I wish they would just drop the kind of like trending and the little other sections and just keep the nice UI. Like, it's a great UI to look at a feed, and also bring instant articles to it, because it's still articles take forever to load.
Well, no, that's true. I don't use the category tabs.
Yeah, I accidentally swipe into them and I'm like, what? These are none of my friends. I follow this?
Yeah. I know when we started talking about instant articles when they first came out, I was shocked that the Paper app didn't get it. I thought for sure that's what makes me think that they are abandoning this project.
Yeah.
Is because if they thought it was worth it, they would have brought at least instant articles to it. You may go down with the ship, but I don't know. I may switch very soon. And it's especially for an app that I don't check very frequently. But when I do, I want it to work, and I want it to work fast.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking, and the last section of updates in the App Store is July 28th, and I've had, I'd say, at least 20, 30 apps update since then, and Paper is not one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of Facebook.
So Facebook put out a new feature recently, and I believe they're just calling it Live. I don't know if they have a particular name.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems really generic. But essentially, Facebook's kind of joining the live streaming race, you know, with Periscope and Meerkat. But there's kind of a twist.
I was wondering how long it was going to take for them to hop on with their own thing.
Well, here's what was two things that are interesting. So you know how kind of Twitter screwed Meerkat, and they came out with Periscope, and they cut off the Twitter API for Meerkat. So then Meerkat kind of buddied up with Facebook, and there was an article, you know, at probably only a week ago, saying that, you know, Meerkat and Facebook have all this integration now for live streaming.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and then yesterday, Facebook puts out this live, but the twist is it's only for quote, public figures. So that's a little generic. I mean, the screenshot is The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, at what looks like maybe a movie premiere. But it really borrows the UI from the other live streaming apps. It tells you how many people are viewing. There's a chat on the bottom. It's interesting because I'm wondering if they're doing this as a test run so that they eventually can open it to all of their 1.5 billion users, or are they just kind of feeling the waters out right now? Because I feel like they're not doing this to like see if their service can handle it. Their service can handle it. I think that Facebook is hesitant to join this live streaming movement fully, because it seems like it's really died down. It seems like the only time I get Periscope notifications or Meerkat notifications is like maybe once every couple of days from maybe like a celebrity. But as far as like, you know, non-public figures, if I'm going to use Facebook's term, I don't really see many people doing a daily live stream.
Are you still beaming?
I am.
Okay, so you've moved on. So that one's still alive. You haven't knocked that live stream
not quite yet.
App out yet.
Not okay. Quite yet.
We'll check in next week. Every company has thrown some app at the wall with it, and it hasn't stuck yet. So I guess we'll just see if Facebook has the just inertia of users that will make this a thing.
Well, that's the surprising thing, is I thought they would just release this for all their users, because you're right, just the fact that they have the biggest user base out of all the social networks, you would assume that they would want everyone live streaming. But
you know, that makes me think, you know, both of those started with Twitter. Periscope is Twitter's, and Meerkat started on Twitter. And Twitter is really where a lot of the nerds are at, our little microcosm of the internet as well. And so I think those apps probably thought, oh yeah, we'll go with the nerds. The nerds will really catch on, and it'll catch on just like Twitter did. But it seems like the nerds like it, but it just doesn't get enough just gravity or inertia to get it moving forward. And maybe with Facebook, as many people are on it, it might finally catch on, just because Facebook has enough users using it.
So moving on to other topics, have you personally ever run into any weird like adware or spyware or anything on your Mac? Like, you've been a Mac user for some time now. Have you ever personally run into that with like pop-ups or...
Not on my Mac.
Really?
I remember it when I had a PC, but I haven't had any problems with my Mac.
Yeah.
Have you?
No, I've not. Okay.
I know we saw it all the time at the Genius Bar. People would somehow randomly get some piece of malware on their computer, and we would just be stunned at how they were able to pull it off.
Well, that's the interesting thing, is because, like, I wouldn't say I'm a careful web, you know, a careful web browser, but you know, when I worked at the Genius Bar, and when I would take Mac appointments, it was, especially in like the last 5 or 6 months of me working at Apple, it was a constant thing that I would see people coming in with, you know, adware, pop-ups, browser hijacking, and I would see it a lot, and I just didn't understand, like, you know, how are they getting it so often? And yes, I live in New York City, so I'm sure that my sample size was a lot larger than other places, but it just seemed like it was rampant. And now, you know, it seems like it's becoming even easier to exploit Mac OS X. So,
well, you know, now that we start talking about this, I haven't had any experience with this on my Mac. But I have had both my sister and my father call me where somebody had some pop-up had come up and said, your Mac is screwed. Call this number.
Exactly.
And Apple will help you. And even though it's not Apple and there's nothing wrong with your Mac, both my sister and my father fell for this. They called the number and they're like, oh yeah, you know, just, hey, what's your password? Blah, 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 blah. And then as soon as they started asking like a couple too many questions, they hung up and like my sister called me and was like, hey, somebody said they need to fix my computer over the internet. And I was like, no, stop. And the same thing happened with my dad. So they've gotten really creative. And if I guess if you don't know what it looks like, if you don't know what all of the Apple UI alerts are and you don't notice that detail, then just any message that says, hey, your computer's messed up, call Apple and we'll help you, sounds really enticing.
Yeah, and so the one that you're talking about is interesting because that one's a JavaScript exploit. And the way that one works is you're on a website and then a pop-up website opens, a window opens, and then within that window, a dialog box comes up. And it says something like that, like, you need to call this number, you've been affected. And when you hit the OK button, it pops immediately back up. And there's no way to get rid of it. And even
unless
if,
you call them.
Yeah. So as a normal user, you're like, okay, I'm going to do what it says, 'cause you're not a nerd. But essentially the way you have to get around that is, you have to force quit Safari. And then if you open up Safari again, it's going to open back up, because Safari by default opens up the last web page that you open and you force quit. So here's what I found out in my time working at Apple. Here's how you have to get around that. You have to hold down, so you have to force quit Safari, and then you have to hold down the shift key. And then while you're holding down the shift key, you click the Safari icon in your dock. And what that does is, it opens Safari with JavaScript disabled. So what happens is that pop-up doesn't come up, and then you can navigate to another web page and then restart Safari. But like, no normal user is going to know how to do that. Like,
like the randomest key.
Yeah, and I remember some users being like, "Oh yeah, I just stopped using Safari. I just
use Chrome." I remember hearing that all the time.
And you're like, "Oh my god, this is crazy." And then the other form was Adware, and essentially the way that would work is, they would go on a website to like stream the World Cup, or they would go on a website to stream a show illegally.
A shady website.
Exactly. And the website would be like, oh, you need this tool to watch it properly. And essentially what it would do is, it was smart. I have to say, these guys were smart.
Oh yeah, they've got it down. Like on those streaming sites, there's two play buttons. There's like the green one and the gray
worst.
One. And if you hit the green one, it downloads something. If you hit the gray one, it starts.
It's the absolute worst. And what happens is, they're smart because most things on OS X require user authentication by default. But the one of the few things that do not are browser extensions. So what would happen is, they would download a browser extension, and then once that extension was installed in your browser, it then had access to whatever it needed to do. And it would inject ads and all these different websites, and it would just be crazy. But now they're saying, Ars Technica was reporting, now that there is this bug that is even worse. It doesn't even need to do that workaround. And it's a bug in the latest version of OS X that just bypasses password protection altogether. So it can be a full piece of software, a full piece of virus or malware software that they could get into your machine without you even having to even hit the enter key. It's a little scary. I won't lie. I think that Apple users have gone many years with this false sense of security regarding, how their machine functions. I think it's time that people start to take a little more notice, if their Macs are infected. And I wrote a piece this week, and I recommended a software that used to be called Adware Medic. And apparently the company who developed the software just got bought out by a larger company called Malwarebytes. And this software is really incredible. I mean, it started out as an Apple script base, but it searches for all this adware and malware on your computer, and it removes it for you pretty rapidly. I don't know. I feel like our listener base may not be as concerned, but I feel it could happen. It could happen. Sometimes you go to a website that you think that is perfectly normal, and once a pop-up comes up, if you don't, if it gets past your pop-up blocker, some of this stuff is unavoidable.
Yeah. So one other thing is, I wish Apple would kind of speed up their reaction times to this. I mean, if ours is writing an article about a exploit that is active and open, Apple, if they can push a U2 album out to everyone's phone and computer, I feel like they should be able to like fix this and get it out. And I wish Apple would just take a little more responsibility for this. And I know they do a lot, but it just seems they're always really kind of slow to this, and they wait to lump it in with the next planned version update for the Mac or the iPhone. I think it's only happened once where they have released a update explicitly for some threat like this. It was not too long ago.
No, it was not too long ago, and it was the only update that they pushed without you having to click update. Like, they pushed it without your permission. It was apparently that serious.
And I wish they would do that with all of these, not just, you know, huge, humongous ones like that, but just doing it for all of these things. It would make these things feel a whole lot more secure.
Yeah, I wish there was I wish there was a checkbox that said all security updates push no matter
do
what.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just do it. Like, interrupt me. I don't care. I mean, if it's a security update, I'm going to want it.
I mean, I will say, though, when that little drop down comes down and says, like, hey, do you want to install these updates now? Like, nah, try tomorrow. Try tomorrow. So, see, they just need to do it without even asking. They just do it. My computer turned off. What happened? You know, as long as everything's saved.
So, Cody, I got some news for you.
Yes.
I'm switching carriers. I'm going to Apple.
Okay. But, sorry to tell you, man, but Apple said they're not doing that anymore.
I know. And everyone was getting pretty pumped when they heard that news. Because if there's anybody to make the carrier experience just seamless, it's going to be Apple.
Talking about that last week. What would it take? Well, I guess if Apple did it, I'd just pop right over. No problem.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't think if Apple did become their own MVNO, I don't think it would be priced cheaper. If anything, it's going to be priced more.
Yeah.
But it would be worth it to just have that. Imagine that experience of walking in on a launch day, and you not only buy your phone, and all you need to do is give them your number from your old carrier, and Apple does some magic in the background, and you've just switched to them. I feel like they could do that. But they don't respond to rumors very often.
I was very surprised that this happened.
Yeah, they responded to this rumor, I believe, under 24 hours. It came out, and they responded, and they were like, we've had no plans. We've done no research. They went into detail as to like, we don't want to be a carrier. My initial reaction was the same thing. Like, whoa, Apple doesn't usually do that. Like, why would they do that? But then
John Gruber summed it up pretty nicely.
Exactly. I mean, they have so many partnerships with carriers worldwide. Forget about just the US. Worldwide, they have all these partners, and you bet Tim Cook was receiving emails in his inbox like, so what's this news about carrier? I thought we had a contract till 2020 or, you know. But someone wrote an article for Wired saying, you know, that they think that it should. I kind of agree with them. I think that it eventually should, because I feel like they can do cool things like, so you know when Google came out with, they announced like, I think it was called Project Fi, and they had this, you know, this technology where it just intelligently switched between Wi-Fi and 3G, whatever's better, and had access to all these hotspots. I feel like Apple could do that, and they could do that in a better way, and they would have a bigger audience right off the bat that would be willing to move to that, to their, you know, so-and-so carrier.
Well, if we bring up the Apple rumor about the car, and it's seemingly like Apple is going to be pairing with BMW for, I assume, the fact that Apple doesn't want to build a bunch of car factories, I think the same thing would probably happen if they did become a carrier. I don't think they wouldn't be able to start from ground up. I feel like they would incorporate with someone and essentially put the like cellular network for iPhone badge on companies or a company. Mm. But the other thing that I kind of really hope this is Apple's quote was saying, we're not doing an MVNO, meaning we're not doing that thing specifically, but we are working on some secret cell thing that we're doing, but it's not an MVNO, so they're being completely trustworthy or forthcoming.
That would be great because, you know, that's the new Apple would sidestep it. The old Apple with like Jobs would literally tell people straight in their face, like, we're not doing an iPhone, like 6 months before, and then all of a sudden they announce an iPhone.
Yeah.
Like that was Jobs' style. He wouldn't care. I think Tim Cook's style is a little more honest.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to, but it would be nice.
But I think you're right. I wouldn't be shocked if they said, no, we're not looking to MVNO, but, you know, a year from now, they announce some crazy new thing that me and you can't really think of right now, and it kind of blows everybody out of the water. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, Apple is full steam ahead right now, and everyone would jump on the bandwagon for that. I can't wait to get away from my car. You have no idea.
So Apple.com got refreshed today.
Yeah, Apple.com.
There's no longer a store.apple.com. Such a good idea.
Great idea. You know, now that I think about it, it's like, why was that? Like, that was like a legacy thing. Like, they could have changed that a while back. You know,
Angela's been up to.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, that was the other thing that made me thought. I said, this is kind of Angela's plan. You know, Angela Ahrens, even though she's the head of like retail, she wants more people to shop online. She wants less people to be in the store. She needs, you know, there's only so many employees they can have in one store helping people. And then we all know it's overcrowded right now. So if you make the web a better experience for people to shop, then they'll be able to, you know, just be on their couch and buy whatever they need to buy. And I think that was the Apple Watch launch was a big signifier of that. The fact that the Apple Watch was online only for the first couple months, they definitely they're trying to drive more traffic to the web. But the first time I went to this new Apple.com, it was on my iPhone.
Yeah.
And I love the new drop down with the hamburger menu. Like, it's not that different from the old one, but like it has this kind of like black overlay and it comes down in one fluid motion. It's really, really nice. I'm loving the new direction because Apple.com, it was in need of a redesign, you know, 5 years ago.
Yes.
So what do you think?
I think it's beautiful. I mean, just I've always loved Apple's web design. They just make things so pretty. But just removing the kind of one extra step in the middle that there used to be from clicking buy now and then it taking you to the store and then going to the cart, but now you just get right into choosing the product that you want and it's going to go right into the cart, is what they, you know, everyone on the internet is like saying, you know, if your cart takes more than a second to load, people will just leave, which is totally true. I mean, how many times have you added something to the cart and then it's taken forever and you're like, ugh, never mind. Yeah. I don't want it anymore. And so now, like, that's what they're doing with Apple, and they're making it easier for you to just go in and purchase things, in addition to it just being absolutely beautiful. They're so good.
I just noticed this now. So you know how the Apple Store kind of got a redesign? I don't know when it was. It was after an event. It
wasn't too long ago.
Yeah.
I think it was with the Apple Watch.
Yeah, and it became – so they went from a standard web design layout to an adaptive layout. It wasn't fully responsive. It was adaptive. So in certain pages, you would still – like you would get the hamburger menu on your phone, but certain pages would still be full screen. It appears to me now, and hopefully I'm not putting my words in my mouth, it appears that this is now a fully – responsive website. When I'm shrinking it down on my Mac right now, it is fully responsive. It goes to the hamburger menu layout when I get really small. And it seems like this was like the full transformation of the site, like kind of what they wanted. Like when I go to the support website now, like on the mobile, the support website is mobile optimized. When I go to the K-base, it's mobile optimized. It just feels... it feels fully formed.
It's interesting that iTunes isn't in the nav anymore. It's music now.
Oh wow, good catch. I didn't notice that. Look at that.
It's music. Support is right up there. I don't think support was up there before. It used to be store.
Yeah, that's
which
smart.
Is great, because how many times have, you know, people been like, how do I do this on my phone? And it's just like, go to apple.com, but where? And yeah. Now it's like very blatant of like, this is where you get help, which is totally something they need as much. You know, we had so many customers coming in the store, and if they would have just gone online and saw that support button and clicked on the right thing, they would have been able to like get help completely over the phone.
So you're right. Thursday is the day for Apple News. So another thing that dropped today was iOS 9 beta 5. Which is
beta 3 for the public beta, right?
Well, will be beta 3 for the public beta. It still hasn't. Okay. Usually the public beta follows like a day later. So hopefully I'll be able to, you know, get it on my iPad tomorrow. But this seems like to be the biggest beta update yet.
Yes.
There are a ton of new things. So why don't you point out a couple?
So one thing, they're finally getting rid of some of the old wallpapers. It was funny that this took so long. I thought they would have gotten rid of them with iOS 7, but they kept around like the 5 and 4 wallpapers, even through 7. And it seems like they're finally getting rid of them to make everybody's home screen, at least the people who go with defaults, look nice and iOS-y. The feather ones are a little weird.
Well, I was just about to point those out. I was actually going to say they're kind of cool. I don't know.
I really
unique.
Like the planets. I really like the planets.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're finally moving beyond just the Earth.
Yes.
It's just a wide variety. They have this kind of like paint explosion wallpaper. We'll have the link in our show notes. Cody, where can people find our show notes, by the way?
diagnosticsandusage.com/29.
And the wallpapers are just a welcome change. And I like that a lot of them have a dark color scheme.
Yes.
I like dark color scheme wallpapers. I think they're, I don't know, I just think that they pop better on the Retina display. So that definitely, you know, it's generally their MO of the betas to like finally put the wallpapers closer to release. So I'm glad that they finally included, you know, a bunch more besides the usual wave that we saw when they announced iOS 9.
And I wonder if they're going to add even new ones with the new iPhone, like they did with the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. They added like the big flowers.
Yes. Yes, yeah. That is true. They added wallpapers last minute for the new iPhone releases. That is smart. So who knows? Maybe that'll be something that's coming up. They're also bringing Wi-Fi calling to AT&T. So with the 6, Wi-Fi calling was only available on T-Mobile. That was the only carrier, at least in the U.S.
Oh, no. T-Mobile and Sprint.
Oh, and Sprint. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That supported it. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm hoping – so I'm on AT&T. I'm hoping that this is not like an extra charge on my bill to use it. I feel like that'd be stupid, but – it'll be nice to take calls and
they think of it as opportunity.
I know, exactly. I'm telling you, I wouldn't be shocked if AT&T charged some kind of surcharge for Wi-Fi calling. But there's another big Wi-Fi feature that you were talking to me about prior to the show.
Oh, I'm so excited for this. Called Wi-Fi Assist. So it will automatically use cellular data when your Wi-Fi connectivity is poor if you turn it on.
Thank God, Cody.
It happens all the time. This is like so good.
This is the iPhone's weak spot is switching. I am very self-conscious of when my Wi-Fi is on, and it's not because of battery. It's because of this. So every morning when I leave my house, I turn Wi-Fi off, and it's now a habit. And I turn Wi-Fi off because I'll be walking down the steps of my apartment, and I'm browsing Twitter, and then all of a sudden, I see the data loader spin, and it can't load anything. And it shows that I have one bar of Wi-Fi, and I'm like, really, Apple? You can't figure out that I am now moving far away from a Wi-Fi base station? Like, just switch it. Like, this makes me so happy, Cody.
Yeah. See, what happens to me is I usually leave Wi-Fi on, and then when I notice that it's slow, I'll turn Wi-Fi off, and then I will forget that I turned the Wi-Fi off, and then the opposite will happen where I'm on data, and I'm like, why is my data so slow? Oh, I'm not on Wi-Fi. And then I turn Wi-Fi back on. And
yeah.
So finally, it will just kind of like with Bluetooth when they switched over to the low energy, and now you can just always leave Bluetooth on, not worry about it. Now you'll just always leave Wi-Fi on, don't have to worry about it.
Great point. That's the thing. Like right now, I leave Bluetooth on at all times. I'm not afraid of battery concerns. So I'm hoping that with iOS 9 now, I'll be able to leave Wi-Fi and Bluetooth on. And just, I mean, this is the future. I mean, like with Project Fi, like let the phone decide what is the better network, and let the phone just pick it. Yep. Like that is really. I mean, that's really all we want. And who knows? Maybe this is a foreshadowing of what the 6S feature has. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it has something unique that we're not thinking about.
So there were a few more like other little tidbits, but the final one you brought up. Now the regulatory info that usually has like the FCC and don't recycle or don't throw in the trash, all that stuff, is now going to be in the settings menu, which means.
They started this with the Apple Watch. So if you notice, your Apple Watch doesn't have any FCC stuff or regulatory information. And it's because it seems like they were able to negotiate this with watches first. If you go into settings, general, I think, regulatory, you can see the FCC. You can see the whatever all these other numbers mean that I don't know, which means that your next iPhone will most likely have a beautiful, clean background, just like the 3D renders that you see on Apple.com. And man, that alone, man, I didn't think I was going to go for the 6S, but that alone may just...
It's going to be really nice. Well, and it makes me think, what if they use a material on the back that before they couldn't etch this on?
Oh, wow, that is true.
Like, I don't know what that is. I mean, they did it with the glass, but they didn't really because it was underneath the glass.
It was underneath the glass on, like, a paper. But you're right. Maybe there is a material. Who knows? It may not feel different, but maybe they can use a stronger material that's more scratch-resistant because they don't have to worry about this stuff getting scratched off. I think that there's all these different things that can open up.
Just as simple as making Johnny Ive happy.
Yeah, it's so true.
This was probably his, like, once he got this negotiated, it was just like drop the mic, and that's when he became head of design chief thing. He was like, I'm done. I got the back of the iPhone cleaned up. We're good.
I agree. I think this had to been this push had to been from the design team, because you spent all this time crafting this beautiful device, and then you get one out of the packaging and it has all this stuff that you never designed for the phone etched on the back to it, and you have no control. It's government regulation. And I'm pretty sure this bill was just passed. I know it was passed.
I think it was
maybe,
last. It's within the year. Remember exactly.
Within
but
the
I
year it was
it.
Passed. I remember them talking about it, saying that, oh, your next iPhone may not have those stuff, you know, the etches on it. But this kind of confirms it, the fact that this is now in there. I'm happy. I think that, I mean, a couple of things. All these little extra features is great. I'm also just excited because it just means that we're getting really close, Cody.
Yep.
We're getting really close to the busy season for Apple. You know, it's been I wouldn't say it's been a quiet summer, so to speak, because, you know, we've definitely had a lot of news come out, and we had that kind of gap filled with the Apple Watch and, you know, the April time frame. But I'm very excited. I'm very excited to get iOS 9 on my phone.
Yes. I was thinking, I can't wait for the event because I want to buy a new iPad and get rid of my iPad 2. I want to get a new one, and I'm just like, I can't buy an iPad Air 2. I have to wait. I have to wait for September or whatever.
Well, no, you probably have to wait. I mean, who knows? Well, maybe. You may have to wait till more like October, November.
Don't disappoint me.
Well,
I have my
dreams.
Do you
want a Pro? Do you want an iPad Pro? I wouldn't be shocked if they...
I know. No. I just have to wait until they announce the next iPad.
I think that you'll be preoccupied with your new iPhone and your new Apple TV in September. So I think you'll have some distractions, okay?
Okay. And an empty bank account.
It's all worth it.
That's what we tell ourselves.
So you have anything else before we wrap up?
No, I think that's it, Joe.
All right. Well, like Cody mentioned before, you can find our show notes at diagnosticsandusage.com/29. If you want to find us on Twitter, the show account is @DAU Show. If you want to talk directly to Cody, what's your Twitter account?
@CP Coates.
And I am @Joe Caiati, CAIATI, and I write at joecaiati.info. We will talk to you very soon. Cody, have a great night.
Bye.